On January 8, 1964, President Lyndon Baines Johnson launched the federal government's war on poverty during his State of the Union address. Seven months later, Congress passed the Economic Opportunity Act and a number of other acts and components as a part of the War on Poverty platform were implemented, which have had lasting change. As we look at the legacies of the War on Poverty, we have to separate myth from fact. The right wing and conservatives have used supposed failures to justify the idea that government should not have any role in eliminating or addressing social problems, and has helped to position a right-wing politics that has galvanized a base and pushed back progressive reform over the last 30 or 40 years. In looking at the legacies of the war on poverty, we want to assess the truth about its successes and also assess what yet still needs to be done. First, there's a need for understanding what the war on poverty was. It was a multi-level assault on economic challenges and inequality, better known as President Johnson's Great Society. Since the 1960s, and 1964 in particular, it has had various iterations in terms of focus, even by President Nixon and even the Carter administration. Taken together, the War on Poverty platform, the Great Society, and other ideas helped provide a very strong force that pushed the nation toward expanded economic opportunity as well as economic and social security. However, by the 1980s, the winds of change began to push back against this effort. And President Reagan himself was known to have said that the nation fought a war on poverty and that poverty won. This was a part of a significant conservative backlash to progressive reform begun with the War on Poverty initiatives. But the truth is, the War on Poverty was a huge success. The federal government helped millions of Americans assisted in finding medical care, food, housing, legal aid, early childhood education, and economic opportunities at levels unbeknownst in prior periods of American history. The poor also helped themselves as well, particularly as we come to understand the poor being demonized, both in theory and also in policy, for being responsible for their own condition. The War on Poverty and Great Society did not completely end poverty, as we know by the reoccurrence today of income inequality. But when the programs flourished during the Great Society, poverty dropped to its lowest points in U.S. history. And also added to that, many poor and women of color and men of color gained new voices and seats at the table in terms of conversations with institutions and programs that impacted their lives. It opened up expanded opportunities as you had growing black middle class and even black political leadership class rising to the forefront to help make real the promises of democracy. The War on Poverty itself focused on four primary areas of opportunity. Those would be juvenile delinquency, civil rights, job training, and education. The most popular program probably from the War on Poverty platform was Operation Head Start, which provided funding for preschool education for poor youth. However, the most controversial aspect was the community action component that was a part of the Title II section of Economic Opportunity Act. And this developed new community agencies that were created to acquire and administer funds, particularly relegated for anti-poverty initiatives, to be, quote, developed, conducted, and administered with the maximum feasible participation of the residents. And although this act, the Economic Opportunity Act, did not provide legal assistance as a part of the War on Poverty, eventually, by the end of the 1960s, the Office of Economic Opportunity had allocated over $20 million for this particular purpose. And so there was some representation to assist community residents in implementing initiatives. Neither the community action nor the War on Poverty's service programs added to the nation's social welfare programs, as has been used by conservative elements to undercut the program. Actually, many of the social programs of the war on poverty era were significantly challenged by the funding for the Vietnam War, which, of course, helped as much as anything else to grind to a halt some of the momentum from the war on poverty. But funding was spent on social services, public assistance, public housing, and legal services for the poor. Medicaid and Medicare established a system of national health insurance for welfare recipients and the elderly. The 1965 Elementary and Secondary Education Act helped to provide monies, federal monies, for public schools, particularly in low-income areas. There are even other benefits that have not gotten significant attention. Operation Head Start, for example, helped large numbers of poor children prepare for school, and a part of this initiative, which had received recent challenge within the last few years, the Upward Bound program helped to prepare numbers of low-income students and students of color for college and provided financial assistance for families from low and moderate income backgrounds. These programs were not perfect. And we certainly need to learn from mistakes made, but more so than anything else, contrary to conservative pundits and think tanks, we need to also emphasize those things that were right and build upon them. And as we look at the 50th anniversary of the War on Poverty, it's important to ask these questions of what role the federal government can play in an intentional manner to address matters of poverty and income inequality. And in particular, as the authors of a very important work, Legacies of the War on Poverty, articulate, we need to have bold, creative experimentation that the War on Poverty helps to model for us. And so these things are very important to understand. Added to it, I think it's important also to address some of the other myths that have come about as a result of the shifting nature of our politics in society. Again, the war on poverty was not solely focused on expanding welfare, as has been propagated more recently. The initiatives from President Johnson were just that, initiatives designed to aid institutions, particularly schools and universities. It aided the establishment of job training programs and initiatives for public housing and new Medicare health benefits for the elderly and Medicaid opportunities for the poor. And more importantly, there were a number of programs that continue to this day that were championed under the banner of the Great Society, in particular War on Poverty. Those would be Head Start, Job Corps, and community health centers, which, of course, has recently seen a revival under the Affordable Health Care Act. Also, the war on poverty had a significant role in challenging racial discrimination that is also a key conduit of its successes, as well as helping to pass the 1964 Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act of 1965. The Johnson administration used the bully pulpit and the war on poverty's platform to help address the issue of desegregation of schools, hospitals, community institutions, and neighborhood facilities. And he also used, and the administration used this opportunity in the doling out of grants, the administration of grants, because he used the phrase that there were no doles to, again, make very clear that this was not a sort of welfare initiative. But as these new grants were being administered, there was a need to comply with the Civil Rights Act, which it helped, to help push through, which made this a dollars and cents issue for many, many states and many groups who were trying to apply for some of the funds. But also, the war on poverty is not something that is past tense. Oftentimes, we talk about historical events in a past tense nature, but it has current ramifications as the past serves as prologue. And many of the programs, again, are still fully functioning, even if they operate under different institutions at this particular juncture in history. But there's a need to look at the way in which these programs addressed the condition of the poor. In many ways, there were significant human capital investments that have to be factoring in if we're going to look at the successes of the war on poverty, and certainly the idea of racial integration and attempts at racial integration, played in helping to provide a plus for these initiatives in terms of their overall impact. But the challenge still remains in terms of poverty rates remaining significantly high. And a recent study showed that, in fact, the U.S. poverty rate declined by 26 percentage points from 1960 to 2010, with most of the shifts occurring before 1980s, and the conservative backlash began to turn the tide on some of the gains of the war on poverty. There were other things, though, in the succeeding years between the 1960s and today that have impacted the progress of the war on poverty. And those factors, as scholars Martha J. Bailey of the University of Michigan and Sheldon Danziger, who are co-editors of the Legacies of the War on Poverty workbook by the Russell Sage Foundation, argue, have impacted, our evaluation of this important initiative. Those factors include globalization, labor-saving technology, and decreases and reductions in labor union enrollment and attacks on unions have overall hurt the wages of American workers, and particularly with jobs being shipped overseas. And this has helped to add to the numbers of poverty, of the impoverished, or the poverty index, as it is understood today. But also they account other factors such as the rise of numbers of single-parent households and young low-income men and men of color in particular being sent to prison as a part of the mass incarceration efforts and the prison industrial complex that have also raised poverty rates beyond what they would have been had these initiatives been allowed to continue unabated. But in terms of learning some of the lessons, again, it's important to understand that history can serve a very important sort of role in helping us to understand what public policies we need to administer today and even utilize in trying to build upon the successes of the war on poverty. Clearly, the efforts established through the development of Medicare and Medicaid, are significant. And although the costs may have gone a little beyond what they originally were, thought to have been, a number of other factors in terms of the economy have shifted to impact this. So it's more than just, overspending that, that conservatives use that has to be looked at. But more importantly than this, we have to look at the long-term effects that these programs have had and the quality of life that they've developed for many of Americans of various backgrounds. And this serves, again, as a great model for how do we devise important policy measures going forward to help extend opportunity and equality for all Americans. And also, we have to understand that much of the war on poverty's significance comes from various programs that were interconnected, working in concert. And I think that's something that's very important to understand when we look at the legacies of the war on poverty. It's important to understand that no single program by itself was enough to eliminate or is enough to eliminate poverty, but a succession of programs interconnected and working toward the same end of part of a multi-pronged initiative and strategy can provide a significant model moving forward. And considering some of the interrelated issues that you know, account for significant levels of poverty and income inequality today, including mass incarceration, family breakdown, unemployment, underemployment, health disparities, and the like. It's important to devise comparable, interrelated, interconnected policy models to address the interrelated, interconnected social challenges that undergird poverty in our nation. So again, we can learn a lot from the war on poverty and its legacies as we try to build a more equitable society through progressive values and progressive policies. And again, I think the last thing to kind of really keep in mind is the need to be bold and think outside the box. And I think oftentimes that sort of not idealism or that vision from the 1960s has somewhat been challenged, with, increased cynicism in our politics and our nation. But I think it's that grand thinking backed by moral imperatives from various sectors of society and people, everyday people, lending their voices, as you will hear throughout this podcast. Real people impact public policy, not just policymakers in state capitals or in city halls or in Washington or on Capitol Hill, but everyday Americans make policy and are impacted by it, and so thus should have a say-so in it. And so moving forward, it's important to listen to these voices and resonate with them and allow these voices to drive our social and public policy rather than the other way around. And this way, we ensure that our democracy is extended and continues, and we're able to provide a more concerted assault on poverty and income inequality to the point to where across the board, in as progressive a way, progressive of a way and fashion, we can, with hopeful momentum and concerted momentum, help to bring about the end to poverty as we know it in our nation and provide a model for how to address it around the world. And with that, we now turn to other sections of our podcast that will address the faces of poverty and some of the people who will put names and faces to the statistics that oftentimes drive our understanding of what poverty or what social inequality is. And hopefully it will help to gain the attention of policymakers and everyday Americans alike to get involved and to help reinvigorate our democracy, understanding that the challenges of others are also our challenges, and that in the words of the great poet Langston Hughes and even others, we too sing America. And so we should join the voices in empathy who are struggling and challenged in our society under issues of poverty and income inequality. Because if we help to address their conditions, then in essence, we're helping to make America stronger for all of us.